Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald DeThay. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop renewable energy capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young African-American men and women locally and nationally and throughout the diaspora. Also to educate the African-American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Ronald DeThay, and we bring this show to you every week over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We are broadcasting. We are streaming via Facebook, Twitter, and Link. Also, ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at Positive Change. P.S. and Paul, C.S. and Cat.com. That's Positive Change, PC.com. Also, this show is brought to you every week, ladies and gentlemen, by the National Association of Blacks and Solar. You can get more information on that by logging on to blacksinsolar.org. Ladies and gentlemen, if you join us on a regular basis, you know our call-in number is 646-668-2948, 664-668-2948. And please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number because you'll be in our green room and we want to in our waiting room, and we want to bring you right on into our living room so you can have a seat and we can have a discussion if you chose to join us today on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a very, very interesting last 24 hours We don't have scheduled guests today, so I'm going to sort of start this show off, and I'll get into our subject matter that we're going to discuss. I was asked to be a participant on a panel yesterday at Howard University here in Washington, D.C. The forum was put on by the Greater Washington Regional Clean Cities Coalition Group. Mr. Antoine Thompson heads that organization. They do a tremendous job in trying to engage the community and educate the community about the renewable energy and the new green economy that's going to is impacting all of us, but specifically African Americans, as we are have been sleep at the wheel over the last 13 years. It's 2023. It's been longer than that. It's been since 2008, because in 2007, a young man by the name of Van Jones, many of you know him as an attorney, former MSNBC news contributor and correspondent. He's also the founder of an organization called Green for All, based out of a nonprofit organization based out of California. Now, in 2007, after Katrina hit New Orleans, Jones authored something called the Green Jobs Act. The Green Jobs Act was legislation that basically codified the renewable energy sector and specifically solar energy. Anyone who has any idea about the solar industry, let me be very clear about this industry. It is nothing new about the solar industry. Solar has been around since the early stages of the Sputnik, which was the space exploration of the U.S., put a man on the moon, because solar panels were used on the Apollo and the early spacecraft that were launched by this nation. Jimmy Carter, matter of fact, had solar panels on the White House. When Reagan came in, he had them taken down. Ladies and gentlemen, under Barack Hussein Obama, through the Sunshine Identity Initiative, this industry took off. And to reinforce what I'm saying, I'm going to play for you an old video, which you can find at my website under Educational Video Galleries, called the Sunshine Identity Initiative, which jumpstart and was the key core element to what we have today in the Inflation Reduction Act and Build Back Better as it relates to renewable energy. And with that being said,
the shift to a cleaner energy economy won't happen overnight, and it will require some tough choices along the way. But the debate is settled. Climate change is a fact. And when our children's children look us in the eye and ask if we did all we could to leave them a safer, more stable world with new sources of energy, I want us to be able to say, yes, we did.
The Sunshine Initiative plays a very key part of the President's Climate Action Plan. In the first term of his administration, President Obama set a very ambitious goal to double the amount of renewable energy on the nation's grid, from wind, from solar, from geothermal sources. And we started planning for the Sunshine Initiative back in 2010. And it all started with a very simple question. What would it take for solar to become an appreciable portion of our nation's electricity and energy generation? The technology has to be cost competitive with conventional forms of energy generation. We set some really aggressive cost goals, achieving 6 cents per kilowatt hour at utility scale. We're 3 years into a decade-long initiative, and we're 60% of the way there. This is really exciting because these are technologies that the Department of Energy has consistently supported the development of and advancement of over a 20 to 30-year time span. We're seeing growth in the sector, we're seeing economic development, and we're seeing jobs. We're looking forward to the companies in the industry to lean forward to help us achieve the central target. But we know that if we can get even very, very close to this target, solar will have a very bright future.
Over the last 8 years, we've seen the solar industry grow by a compound annual growth rate of 72% per year, one of the fastest growing industries in the United States, and certainly the fastest growing sector of the energy industry. The goal of 6 cents per kilowatt hour is essential in the next few years, and that's going to be accomplished in large part with a partnership between the DOE and the industry. But the great news is you don't drill for solar, you don't mine solar, you manufacture it. When you manufacture it, you install it, and that means you're creating jobs in the field. The market for solar installations has grown dramatically over the last several years. And in fact, today there's over 11 times as many solar installations as there were in 2008. Just since 2012, the number of solar jobs has increased by 20%, and that's an increase that's 10 times faster than the general increase in jobs in the U.S. economy. Today and every day, 56 new solar jobs are being created.
Every 4 minutes, another American home or business goes solar. Every panel pounded into place by a worker whose job cannot be outsourced. Taken together, our energy policy is creating jobs and leading to a cleaner, safer planet.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you are African American descent, I have some very, very disturbing news on this broadcast this morning. As we begin to fast forward to 2023 where we are, we realize that we've been through quite a bit of issues surrounding the renewable energy sector since Obama's administration. We are now, from 2014 to 16, rather, because we had Obama for 8 years, 2008 to 2012, his second administration was reelected in 2012. 2016, we had a major political misstep in this country as it relates to presidential politics, because we had someone called Donald Trump who became president of the United States, and basically he tried to turn back everything that Obama's administration had been doing in the sector of renewable energy, to make it long and short. Now, last week I had the privilege of being at an event that was put on by Advanced Energy United here in Washington, D.C., and at that particular event, I was able to meet several of the presenters that were a part of that event. I met Mrs. Heather O'Neill, President and CEO of Advanced Energy United. And I was able to speak with Mrs. Jennifer A. Dowdy, Energy and Environmental Policy Reporter for Bloomberg News, at this event. This event, ladies and gentlemen, was hosted here in Washington, D.C. And on board with this event, you had the Solar Industries Trade Association. You had a group called ACOR. You had a group called Zeta. You had Advanced Energy United. And one other policy group that participated in this particular forum. Now, with that being said, we are aware where we are at the present time. We need to know where you are around these issues as we try to move the needle forward around these issues. I have been in a number of forums, panels, webinars, and the same thing keeps coming back to me as I listen recently to engagement that was taken through the Department of Transportation around what we know as the greenhouse gas initiative or funding program. This particular program is one of many as we begin to look at where the United States is right now in terms of dealing with the issue of transportation and the funding that is going out as it relates to these grant opportunities. One of the grant opportunities that we are speaking to is the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Formula Program. Now, this information can be verified by logging on to Drive, D-R-I-V-E, Electric, E-L-E-C-R-I-T-E, .gov. That's driveelectric.gov is the transportation website where all this data can be located, and you can follow what we're talking about here on this platform, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact on Black America. Once again, driveelectric.gov is the website. Once you do that, you want to find out who they are. The Joint Office of Energy and Transportation team has developed expertise in zero emissions transportation. If the joint team also helps coordinate and leverage expertise between the U.S. Department of Energy and U.S. Department of Transportation to further progress on grid zero emissions transportation infrastructure. The following people are key contacts for the joint office. You have a Caven, C-G-A-B, Klein, K-L-E-I-N, Executive Director. Mr. Klein is Executive Director of the Joint Office of Energy and Transportation. He previously served as Commissioner at the Department of Transportation as Director of Transportation in Washington, D.C., Department of Transportation, where he revamped technology reforms, platforms, government process, while focusing on putting people versus cars first, city streets. Now, I don't think he did a hell of a job here personally, because we our streets here in the nation's capital have been reduced to one lanes for bike paths. And people really can't get in a place in the district. If you drive for a living, you are in a short, you are short because you can't move around the district based on what this gentleman has put forth. But now, as you see, he's been appointed as the executive director for the Joint Office of Energy and Transportation. You have Mrs. Rachel Netter is the deputy director of the Joint Office of Transportation. And if you look at her background, it includes, through her career, she has focused on researching transportation systems and developing strategies, technologies, in concert with supporting policies. Well, previously she held various positions, including Deputy Director of Transportation and Policy at the White House Council on Environmental Quality. That explains it all. These are political appointments. So they're the ones who get these opportunities. Alex Sober, Chief Technology Office, Program Staff, Sarah Standis, and Reliability Program Managers. Stevie, L-O-M-M-E-L-E. Kevin Miller, Senior Advisor for Business Models. Lisa Myers, Interim Program Executive Officer. Mike Superio. And Deb Skinner. Not one of these folks look like me, ladies and gentlemen. And this is what I'm talking about the Biden administration. When you begin to drill down and get into these key agencies and look at who the decision makers are at the top, they don't look like African Americans. I am trying to find out, where is the Green Economic Development Plan in the, as it relates to the implementation of the Biden Build Back Better and the Inflation Reduction Act? We're talking about $375 billion, ladies and gentlemen, under that chasm initiative passed by the House and the Senate. That's just disappointing me. That was what our topic was at Howard University yesterday that brings me back to the point that I'm making. What does Justice 40 really mean? The Justice 40 initiative, based on Mrs. Rachel Patterson, who is the policy director for Green Action, Evergreen Action Group, which is a nonprofit organization that follows these issues. You need to know where the Justice 40 initiative came from. The Justice 40 initiative came from which executive order, which was the first thing that the Biden administration did when he came to office. He signed Executive Order 13895, which gave rise to the Justice 40 Initiative. But the Justice 40 Initiative originally came out of the state of California by grassroots organizations such as, we mentioned, Green for All. We also have to give credit to Green the Church, Reverend Carroll's African-American-based church in California, which has a ministry addressing the issue of greening the church and this new economy coming into place that the African-American community is paying for and being left out. And I'm going to break that down and connect the dots on this show today. Now, inside of that, we're looking at, as I said, programs. One of those programs, as I indicated earlier, is the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Formula Program. The $5 billion, I said billion dollar, not million, B-I-L-L-O-N, NEVI Formula Program provides dedicated funding to states to strategically deploy EV charging infrastructure and establish an interconnected networks to facilitate data collection, access, and reliability. Under the program, each state is required to submit an annual EV infrastructure deployment plan that describes how the state intends to use appropriated NEVI formula program funds in accordance with the federal guidance. Below are resources dedicated to the plan for development and implementation. This is the catch-22 with Justice Wharton. When we begin to look at the fact that executive orders signed by the president are only binding as it relates to federal agencies, it has no authority in over state legislative bodies, Congress, the House, and the Senate in all 50 states are those governors. Unless legislation is introduced by a state delegate and the state legislature votes to adopt the Justice Party Amendment as a legal and binding, legally binding as relates to the federal funding that the state receives through these funding programs. In other words, out of 50 states, we only have four states that state legislatures have introduced legislation, passed it, to adopt the Justice 40 initiative that makes it legally binding on that state, where those communities who need the most help, if they apply for that funding and they feel that they were unfairly passed over, can contact their U.S. attorney's offices, consumer divisions, and get some inquiries as it relates to why these initiatives are not funded in these counties that need the most help. That is why only four state legislatures have adopted that, because other than that, once this federal money reaches the states, the governor can do whatever he wants to do with that money in the state legislature if they don't make pass this legislation to make it legally binding. Now, it is very interesting. You don't have to take my word for it. You can log on to my website at positivechangepc.com. Click on the news and events tab, and you will see National Call, which was put on by the group Evergreen Action. We're going to play a little portion of that here. Now, this was over a year ago, ladies and gentlemen. Monthly National Call. I'm going to fast forward this. We're going to watch this on YouTube. as relates to who this is, and you're going to hear the introduction of...
I'm Frances Stewart. I'm one of the co-chairs of the Education Committee for Urban Climate Action. And we're very excited this evening to bring you a talk by Rachel Patterson. Rachel is a policy lead at Evergreen Action, and she has tremendous breadth of experience working in policy in climate, energy, green transportation, and environmental justice. Before she went to Evergreen, she was the legislative and climate associate and environmental advocate in New York, where she supported policy development, analysis, research, and engaged with state legislators and coalitions. She's also served as an Excelsior Fellow of Andrew Cuomo, when he was governor of New York. Rachel holds an MPA from Columbia and BA from Public Health and Environmental Science from Mills College. She's currently pursuing a JD, a law degree in law. She's also active in her community, currently serving on the Albany Community Policing Accountability Committee, and is a member of the Albany Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. So, incredible background on college. She'll be talking about Justice 40 and some of the other work that Evergreen Action is doing. She'll be with us at 7 o'clock. From 7 o'clock. Our time, and depends on where you are. A little extra for you tonight.
Is also overseen by the Office of Management and Budget, which, as the title indicates, really supports a lot of the budgeting of the and there are a number of agencies that are implicated because they either have clean energy-related programs or climate change-related programs. So what are these programs that are related to justice? So some of them are relatively obvious. EPA's programs around trans pollution into the air. There's a list of programs that the Biden administration came out with that agencies will have to comply with as far as Justice 40. And some of them might surprise you. Some of them are things, for example, like clean water programs or updating, sewage systems and things like that. So there are a number of programs that could relate to climate and clean energy. And I'd encourage you to check out the White House recently put together a whole website on environmental justice and Justice 40, and there you can find information about which of the programs are expressly decided as covered programs. However, this is, of course, the first time the federal government is making this kind of commitment. So it's very new, and as all new things, there are some hiccups to work out, some challenges. One of the challenges from my perspective of this program is that outside of the list of programs that the Biden administration has said must be Justice 40 covered, agencies will have a lot of discretion to decide whether or not the programs and the policies that they have relate to Justice 40. So it's up to people like us to pay close attention to what agencies have decided and whether or not we think that agencies should be stepping up to devote more of these funds and more of their programming efforts to the other really important piece to talk through here, who are disadvantaged communities. And this is a relatively contentious definition because there are some states and agencies who already have defined disadvantaged communities, but generally the sentiment is that they are communities who are both overburdened by pollution and also who have been historically marginalized in some sense. So that might be low income, that might be low educational attainment, that might be because of race or immigration status, etc. And it may be one of those factors or a variety of now, who are disadvantaged and where are they? Because those two questions are critical to understanding how this liberty benefits. And then I also find it very important to talk about where Justice 40 came from because it came from frontline activists in states like New York and California who were tired of not receiving any investment. And it's really important to understand that the intention behind the 40% program is really just that these communities have been left already underinvested in. As we all know, transitioning away from fossil fuels is very expensive. It requires a lot of infrastructure, and it requires a lot of infrastructure. And so without this intentional investment, these communities who are already overburdened will continue to be the type of pollution, and we really want to limit that. So New York and California at various times implemented laws that required that no less than 35% of the benefits of investments of a transition to a clean energy economy be put in marginalized communities. And then through advocacy, this was brought up to the federal level and bumped up to 40% standard. That's really exciting. And I do want to emphasize here, as an advocate, 40% is really the floor here. So when we are saying justice 40, 40% is the minimum goal, but there is no reason that agencies can't go further and provide more benefits for their communities. So what are agencies doing now with justice? The program has been out over a year. Where do we stand? So the first very important piece, as I mentioned before, is identifying who are disadvantaged communities and where are they. So the Council on Environmental Quality, CEQ, who oversees the whole program, has been working on a climate justice screen. But that sounds odd. So we usually do. And it has gone through an initial stage of receiving public input. There is a beta version out right now, which you can check out on the CEQ website, or if you just Google Climate and Economic Justice Green, you can see it and play around with the map. I would encourage you to do so because the CEQ is still taking input on how accurate the map is. And the accuracy of this mapping tool is critical because agencies will be using this to decide how much money to provide additionally, it is that localities can use this map and that nonprofits and the private sector can. We've already heard the private sector calling for this to be the best version of the map that it could possibly be because they do intend to make investments on par with the federal government in these areas. So I would encourage you to look at that. My organization has done a lot of advocacy recently on trying to get race included in this tool. It's currently not included, which is a little bit of a problem as far as accurately depicting where these communities are and who these communities are. So that's ongoing, and we expect to see a final version of the tool sometime this year so that agencies can really hit the ground running with the rest of this funding coming out of the infrastructure investment. Which brings me to the second major area where agencies are taking action in relation to justice. So the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which was passed over a year ago, as I'm sure you all know, was a once-in-a-generation investment in infrastructure, and the great thing about it is that a lot of that can be tooled for climate-related infrastructure. So there's billions of dollars that states and local governments will be able to use to directly reduce pollution and provide that new critical infrastructure to transition to a clean energy economy, IIJA specifically with relation to justice. And if you're interested, the Biden administration put out a guidance document which outlines, which you can Google IIJA guidance, and it will come up, and you'll see the list of programs that are associated with Justice 40 in the IIJA. Brings me to the tracking, because just saying that there's money out there part here is really making sure that it gets to the right. So the three agencies that will really have a hand in getting these clean energy investments and getting Justice 40 related benefits to communities out of the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act are going to be the Department of Energy, the EPA, and the Department of Transportation. Now, this is really important to understand because even though there are billions of dollars in the IIJA, 90% of the funds are actually going to be authorized from the federal government and given directly to states. this is important because states do not have to follow Justice Court. Justice Court is a federal mandate. And so we run into a problem here if states choose not to adopt the Justice 40 plan. So we as advocates and as our community members need to make sure that when our states grab those dollars, that they are being invested in the right way.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was what I was saying. I wanted you to hear from Mrs. Rachel Patterson's mouth. This is the problem. This was the discussion I shared yesterday at Howard University. And as we look at the amount of funding that's being made available through the various programs. Now, our lead for this show is the Greenhouse Reduction Fund. That's how we led off with today's show. So what we're going to do, we're going to cut to the chase. And we're going to go and look at, once again, utilizing data that was supplied by Evergreen Action Group. What is the Greenhouse Reduction Fund? Now, we're going to jump right into this subject matter as we take, after we take a slight pause for the cause here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Now, if you have any comments, anything you'd like to say, you can call 646-668-2948. Once again, you can call 646-668-2948 as we take a slight pause for the cause here on Solar Now and the Future with this economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing.
Life and tune.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And as we were talking about what is the Greenhouse Reduction Fund, and I basically gave you some information as relates to that. In passing the Inflation Reduction Act, ushered in the largest investment in climate and clean energy in our nation's history. But our work isn't done yet. Effectively and equitable implementation will be key to ensuring that we realize our climate goals, cut greenhouse gas pollution, advance environmental justice, and create good-paying jobs that propel the clean energy economy. In order to assist federal agencies, local communities, tribal governments, businesses, and other partners to take full advantage of the historic funding, Evergreen Action is writing a series of blogs breaking down several key programs in the RRA, providing a massive $27 billion. The Greenhouse Reduction Fund, largest grant program within the RRA, not only does it provide massive investments in pollution-reducing clean energy technology, but it targets communities that have been historically overlooked and underserved and brings equity to the clean energy transition. I question the hell out of that. When I began to look at the people who weighed in on public comment around this issue as it relates to the EV charging industry and looked at the issues, you get the same players. You get the Solar Industry Trade Association. Well, SEIA hadn't done a hell of a lot about the deplorable numbers as it relates to the statistical data that show the number of African Americans that's been hired in the solar industry since 2010. Since they've been tracking the data. I will tell you that the National Association of Blacks in Solar, who I, yours truly, is the sitting president to the present date, we have looked at this data. We have followed this data since, for at least 5 years, it's 2023, we've been following this information since 2018, and we've looked at these numbers. And when it looked, when you begin to look at African Americans in terms of us being 40 million plus in this USA, and look at our key geographic locations as it relates to urban markets, and look at the states that have bought into existence and passed renewable port portfolio standard legislation, which for our listening audience is called RPS, is the abbreviations for Renewable Portfolio Standard. You'll see it all the time, RPS. Well, RPS means a certain percentage of energy must come from renewable energy sources in a designated market area, whether it be solar, wind, hydroelectric, nuclear, which is considered clean energy sources, alternative fuel sources. Some are classified as renewable energy sources, battery storage, and other different entities come into play as we are challenged to put these technologies together to address climate change. Now, providing the $29 billion, it looks and goes on to say, the financing will have both immediate and long-lasting impact deploying clean energy projects in communities now supporting creation of green banks that can finance clean energy projects into the future. The deadline to take advantage of these funds is fast approaching. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, has until September of 2024, has until September 2024 to award the money out, and that follows potential to startups, transitions to clean energy, reduction harmful pollutions and impacted communities. It will take engagement from communities, nonprofit, financial institutions, state, local, and tribal governments to deliver transitional impact. This means equitable investment in projects, long-term development strategies, that prioritize benefits for historically harmed communities. How does the CGGR work? $27 billion is divided among three competitive programs, each in different intentions. The National Investment Fund with Clean Communities Investment Accelerator, the Solar and Solar for All competition. These three programs will provide 55% of the benefit to disadvantaged communities, making this one of the most impactful inflation reduction low-income programs, black, brown, and indigenous communities. Nonprofits are eligible nonprofits for the purpose of GGR programs refer to only nonprofit organizations that have designed to provide capital leverage, private capital, provide other financial assistance, that deployment of clean energy technology will, with the ability to invest in the finance projects and must be funded by public or charitable contributions. So that eliminates a whole bunch of 501c3s that's run by African-American black folks. That's just my point. As head of the National Association of Blacks and Solar, we are waiting on our letter of determination. You also must then register with SAM. You must also jump through all of the necessary hoops so people can find out who you are, what you are. Your website must be up and running. Your collaborations must already be in place. This is something that black folks, we ain't worked well with each other on around anything, sir, as it relates to this clean energy industry. You have the HBCU SoCo Collaboration Group, headed by Mr. Donald Butler, organization based out of Miami. I've had conversations in the past. The issue of who they can trust comes up when you ask them to sign a notice of non-disclosure concerning proposals that you're submitting to them in order to try to move the ball forward, because when people invest their time in developing intellectual properties, they don't just send documents out to people so they can take it and go run with it, because they may have a connection or a leg up in the process of who you know that will do something for you. This is the problem when we begin to try to work within our own ranks as African Americans. The amount of self-hatred and distrust for each other has been a major problem as relates to how they have designed the requirements for you to move forward. In other words, you can't be out there by yourself. And when you begin to try to pull these collaborations together, you will find out that you also have those influences from outside of the African-American community who want to cherry pick who the leadership's going to be as long as it serves their interests. Because one thing we have to understand is that white women are considered as minorities under 8A contracting law, so they are also eligible to come in and go after these dollars. And you have plenty of organizations who will hire some black folks to so-called cater to black folks' needs, but the bulk of the lion's share of the money goes in the administrative, and that's how they get paid for coming into our communities, running things for us, and they ain't doing us no favors. So we speak truth to power here on this platform, solar now and the future, with its economic impact on black America. Also, under the Greenhouse Reduction Fund and the driveelectric.com, it talks about the CIF is the discretionary grant program, which has been set up, which basically deals with alternative fuels and EV charging infrastructure. And there's $2.5 billion in that particular pool of grant opportunities. So all of this information can be found by logging on to the different websites that I'm sharing with you. One is driveelectric.gov. The other one will be positivechangepc.com. You want to click on our news and events tab, and you can scroll down and you'll be able to locate these articles, and you'll be able to get the information from very, very researched and reliable sources as it relates to how this will have an economic impact on the African-American community. Ladies and gentlemen, as we do every week, you know, this we program this show, and we spend a lot of time and energy attempting to talk about things that have immediate impact. And this has an immediate impact for individuals who live in our nation's capital. The nation's capital, which their utility company is Pepco, which is a subsidiary of Exelon Corporation. Very, very necessary for people to be aware that if you live in the District of Columbia, that you have just been hit, and you will see it on this month's electric bill with a 14% rate hike increase for energy. Now, this release was put out on the 16th by the Public Service Commission here in Washington, D.C. If you need assistance with your electric bills, there are different links under this article that you'll be able to click onto and find resources for help through the Department of Energy and Environment, DC Sustainable Utility. There are links here to their website. I strongly recommend that you go there as quickly as possible, because people going to be lining up, ladies and gentlemen. An extra $30 a month takes a big chunk out of those of us who are on suffer from a disease called. Means you work all your life, you in your 60s and your 70s, and you now depend on Social Security that folks on the Hill just wanted to take that away that we worked for all our lives and paid into. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to another close of another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And as we say every week, we don't want you to meet us back here. We want you to beat us back here as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with this economic impact on Black America. Until next week, we say go in peace.
Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do. You control what you do with your life.
is a song worth singing.